You are listening to the Massive Report podcast.
Back from vacation, washed up on the shore here on High Street at Hendox. It's a Monday. It must be the Massive Report. Brought to you by 180 Property Development for their sponsorship of the Massive Report. We do appreciate. 180 Property Development is your partner in redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. Alex Stanek is here. Bart Logan is here. Sam Fahmy is here. And I'm Brian Phillips, back from vacation. You know how much crew soccer I saw on vacation? There were three games while I was gone.
Hopefully, as little as possible.
I saw none. And I wanted to, but you know, when you're in another place, you got to figure it out. You're a few malted grain beverages into your evening. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You're sitting on a dock watching people not catch fish. And pretty soon you forget that there's another world out there. But it sounds to me, we were talking before we started, that I didn't miss a whole lot at all.
Sitting at a dock not watching people not catch fish is a pretty good analogy for what we just...
Beautiful, beautiful. All right, so let's work our way backwards and go through it as quickly as possible because we have some new signings to talk about, which I think is way more important. All right, Seattle at Moffray Stadium this past Saturday. Was it Saturday or Sunday? It was Saturday. It was Friday.
Saturday.
And it was my daughter, when we were driving around somewhere down in North Carolina, she goes, the crew took the lead at some point in this game, and then she goes, oh, and then they lost. And that was pretty much the end of it. So we took the lead on a PK, huh?
I scored a goal. I think that was like the first time in a month, or not maybe not a calendar month, but at least 30 days. So that was nice for a little bit. And then it's just, I don't know, watching this crew team in general, it feels like watching the Cleveland Browns for like all of my life except for this past year, and that like you know they're going to lose, and the question is just like how soul crushing. And this one was like pretty much for the ages. You have Nicholas Lodiero of all people just diving, master of the dark arts, and he ends up scoring the eventual game winner off the boot of Alex Crenali, and then Alex Crenali has a chance to tie it in at the death, and he skied it, and it was pretty soul-crushing. This was up there with them.
So this was a crew game 2019 from Central Casting, basically. It's like, let's take a typical crew game for this season off the shelf and open it up, and that's what it was.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not 100% sure, but I'm starting to think that Don Garber took the money that he got from the Haslams and the Edwards and invested it in some sort of black magic curse hex thing that they've put on the crew. Mm-hmm. 'Cause all of these games are almost like they're designed to be as painful as humanly possible.
Yeah.
It's 75 minutes of boredom, followed by 10 minutes of joy, followed by 5 minutes of just soul-crushing depression. This team is historically bad, and I think it's time that everybody just... Forget about the playoffs.
It's
not going to happen. And just embrace chaos and, you know, get ready. And I don't know if you guys have ever seen the picture on Twitter of, like, Elmo where he's, like, got his arms up and there's, like, fire behind him.
Yeah.
That's kind of how I feel about this crew team for the rest of the year. I'm just going to embrace the chaos.
Sure.
It is what it is. Yeah, it was not a fun game.
All right. So let's just throw that one away. We went to Salt Lake over the 4th of July holiday. That was the night of the Jamaica game. And there was a rain delay there, and then the crew started at 10 o'clock. And again, I'm out on a dock watching people not catch fish. It's pretty much, you know, I'm pretty simple on vacation. Put a beer in my hand, put me on a chair, and just let me stare out into the water. And it sounds like that game was sort of like staring out into the water.
This would be if they didn't even get a fish on the line. They managed zero shots, or on target at least.
I think
maybe three or four total, but nothing at all that threatened.
Yeah, if you gave me a choice between watching that game and watching actual fishing, like just like a video of Frankie Haydock fishing.
Well, they show fishing on like Fox Sports. It's a professional sport.
Yeah, you give me 90 minutes of Frankie Haydock fishing in a pond in Columbus over this game, I will take that 10 times out of 10. 100%.
I would take that maybe over like a handful of crew wins or at least draws, though.
Yeah. That's true. That's true. Can that be a thing? Can we like contact the social media people and just be like, can we get a 1 hour long YouTube video of Frankie Haydock fishing somewhere? Preferably like with other crew players. Like it could be like a weekly, monthly thing.
Well, yeah. he's a fellow Westervillian, so I'll get him out on Elm Creek in a kayak. And we'll see what we can do.
Like the James Corden stuff, or like the Jerry Seinfeld, like you know, getting coffee with comedians in cars.
Oh, yeah.
Just fishing with Frankie.
Yeah, fishing.
Come on,
fishing with Frankie needs to be a thing. This is best idea that this podcast has ever.
See, let's just go.
At least, that's you know, finding the silver lining in just how bad the crew are right now that we have to find anything else to talk about, including.
This is the most joy the crew have brought me in 6 months.
Well, listen, we all find Orlando City and their fans irritating, and during segment three tonight, we'll figure out how to beat them down in their park. They are they're a whiny, entitled bunch for no particular reason, and we find ourselves even looking up at their sorry asses on the table. So that's something to shoot for. Maybe take something away from them.
Yeah.
So that game is coming up this weekend down there. We'll preview that later. So let's throw away what I missed on vacation, because apparently I didn't miss much at all, but the signings are interesting. First and foremost, a goalkeeper that I saw on TV during the Gold Cup, a man named Eloy Room from Curaçao, whom the U.S. played during the Gold Cup. It was rather surprising to see that particular tiny Caribbean nation make it so far, but a lot of these kids, they said, never. They grew up in the Netherlands because this was a Dutch colony back in the day. So a lot of these kids just grew up in Holland and played there. So you can understand how they would have a high level of play. What do we know about this guy, Eloy Room, the goalkeeper? The crew signed, and I presumably will play this coming Saturday against Orlando.
Well, I mean, I think he's a really talented keeper. We saw what he did against the U.S. I mean, and he has European experience and, you know, comes from a league in, I think he was with Eindhoven before, PSV Eindhoven.
And especially good team. You know?
Yeah, and I mean, they don't sign chumps. I mean, he's a really talented guy. He was the second string keeper for them and became a free agent this summer, and we picked him up. And I think he's a really good signing. We needed a player like that. Losing Stefan was kind of a big blow for us. He had bailed us out a lot of times where this team really wasn't that good, but we would, you know, sneak away with a point or something like that off of, you know, Stefan standing on his head. Room has games where he does that. We saw it in the Gold Cup. And so it'll be interesting to see, you know, how he fits in, how he is able to communicate with his back line, how quickly he can kind of get his feet and find form with this team. But he's coming to an easier league than the league he was in before. Mm-hmm. And I think he will fit in nicely, and I think he's a great signing.
What's his style of play? What's his style of goalkeeping? What are his strengths and weaknesses?
I think he's really good from a positioning standpoint. In terms of his style, he's not like a sweeper keeper or anything like that. I don't know about his agility or anything like that, but his feet are good. He's got just good positioning, good reflexes, and I think he's going to be an above average MLS keeper. I'm not sure he's going to be the best keeper in the league. I'm not sure he's going to match Stefan. I don't think he's going to.
That's hard to do.
Yeah, but I don't think we're going to find anybody who's going to match Stefan. It's like he's one of those guys that you know you're going down a notch when you get rid of him. But it's good for Stefan and it's good for the team, honestly, that he moved on, because we can then, you know, tell other top level talented players, hey, come here, spend a couple years, we'll move you on. But he's definitely an upgrade over what we have, so I'm excited to see him get out there and see what he can do.
And I think that's the point you made. He's, you know, he might be above average, but right now we're seeing we don't have you know, replacement level goalkeeping for you with either of the options, Bednik or Kempin. You know, all due respect to them. It's just that they're not cutting it. You're not getting. You'd get just by law of like statistics. You've got to find a way to get a draw in one of these games during this, you know, hellish skid that we've been on. And I think at any point you just. The rest of the season out, I feel like, I'm sort of, you know, with Alex, that it's the playoffs are a long shot, and I don't know that that should necessarily be the goal. So you got to find what you've got from here, if you're Caleb Border, that can work, that's something to build on for 2020 and beyond. And you know you don't have that with those goalkeepers. You know they're not getting you, you know, even helping you tread water. So at any, I'm open to any replacement right now, anything.
Well, that's a position that you have to address really before any other, you know. And it's a step in the right direction. And also, if I might suggest to the people that do the in-game production, that when he makes a big save, you play Soundgarden's Room 1,000 Miles Wide.
I like it.
Right? All right. Luis Diaz comes to us from Costa Rica. We were talking before we started. It's hard when you watch events like the Gold Cup or, you know, World Cup, when they mention players of various statures, and, well, he plays for blah, blah, blah in the blah, blah, blah league. And there are so many professional leagues all over the planet, and it's difficult to put any of that into perspective and compare it to MLS, which, you know, we're interested in, well, how do we measure up with this league and that league? Luis comes to us from Costa Rica, and Costa Rica certainly has had a lot of success internationally compared to a lot of countries of their size and their, you know, their financial wherewithal. But a lot of these guys come to MLS and become better players. The league has certainly helped our opponents in CONCACAF, as we talked about. He's young, and he's coming to Columbus Crew. What do we know about Luis Diaz?
Yeah, I mean, he's a Costa Rican, young, talented player. He's a winger. He comes from a club called Herediano in Costa Rica. They're a well-known team. And, you know, a top-level team in the country. Incredibly pacey, seems to have good feet, can take a shot from outside the box in the highlights that we saw anyway. 20 years old, I believe.
I like that.
Yeah, he's definitely got room to grow. He's going to need time.
Yeah.
I don't think that he is able to kind of become a superstar right away, but I think he's somebody who can contribute long-term for this club, and I think, you know, it's an investment signing. We're trying to do what Atlanta was trying to do earlier, which is, you know, sign players for a decent fee, hold on to them for a couple years, let them get the experience they need, and then sell them on for a much bigger fee. This is the Crew's first kind of foray into this under Edwards and Haslam ownership, so we'll see how it plays out. I trust Bezbachenko. I haven't seen much of this kid, to be honest with you. I've seen the highlights. And highlights can always be deceiving. You get like one rocket from 30 yards, and you think this guy puts things away like that every week when it's kind of a fluky goal. But he seems to fit what we're looking for in a winger, which is somebody who can break at defenses quickly and, you know, get behind the defense, play the ball across to Zardes, and let Zardes finish.
Well, that's the advantage to being a club that's all but out of the playoff race, is that We should get a look at these guys, see what they can do, give them some experience. We don't expect him in the starting 11, certainly at least not right away. Do we see him having minutes? Bart, you look like you're like, throw him out there.
You know, I at this point, yes, I think throw him out there. You're paying him young DP dollars.
Who sits?
Luis Argudo. I mean, you know, they're look at who was starting right now. Robinho, potentially.
Yeah.
I'm not sure. Robinho, I'd like to have seen more of throughout this stretch. Certainly a goal at some point. But I think the other thing, you know, albeit this is an extremely small sample size, but he did face some MLS caliber competition in CONCACAF Champions League. Two games against Atlanta United, he scored once and assisted twice. He started both of those games, but I think, if I'm reading this right, the goal and assist he may have had was throughout his season. But, I mean, this is a guy who's played a little bit against MLS teams, and at this point, no. I think you've got to you've got to at least see what you've got from him. You know to an extent what you've got, you know, even in a David Akam. And David Akam's not a guy who's going to be on this team next year. And you've already negotiated the fee, so it's not like you're trying to, you know, showcase him so you can get some more from him. So I want to see as much of him as possible.
Well, Akam was brought aboard when there was still hope that this team would make the playoffs, and with, of course, the caveat that he would be leaving. Maybe he just needs to go house hunting a little early, so to speak. Maybe that he sits and this kid plays. I don't know. I want to see the young guys myself. I want to. Who cares at this point? Let's see them play. Yeah. Let's get them some experience. And to that end, the other new signing, Romario Williams. That's a great name. It just rolls right off the. Romario Williams. Sounds like a ball player almost. What do we know about him?
He's been backup for Atlanta for a while. I don't think he's been particularly prolific at the time. But I think it's just right now he gives you, you know, something different. I think it's a precursor to something a little bit more. I think Patrick Mullins reiterated this weekend that he's not cut out for what you need from this team for Columbus. And so this guy is one that gives you, you know, some additional depth at the striker position, gives you more competition, and could, you know, potentially be, you know, if you want to loan out J.J. Williams to get him regular minutes, he could serve as a primary backup or serviceable
and
one.
As we talked about a couple of weeks ago, his J.J. Williams in training, as Murph told us, he hasn't learned how to be a professional yet, is what we're hearing. So more seasoning down a level, I think, would do him some good. When you see him play, you go, I get why people like him. But, you know, if the professionalism isn't there, there are plenty of guys who have professionalism. And this team needs a lot of that. I think they say the right things. But that's only part of the puzzle here. But I do love that they're continuing to try to make this team better.
Yeah.
And they're not just throwing their hands in the air. Addressing goalkeeper is very exciting to me. And it gives us a reason to look forward to the match this weekend in Orlando. And whether he starts or not, I don't know. That's up to them. But I would love to see him do it. Let's just get him out there again. Get him out there and see how he fits in. Certainly he impressed when we saw him in the Gold Cup. So that's Room, that's Diaz, that's Williams. You can find out more about them, massivereport.com. I love reading the content, and you can do the same. You can also, when we have a home game, win tickets from the Massive Report. When's the next home match? I take them one at a time.
July 20th, I believe.
Oh, yeah,
right?
Against Montreal. So next week we'll have a pair of tickets to give away for that match as we preview it. But that's next week on the Massive Report. Coming up next, we're going to talk about happy things, exciting things, and we're going to see where we're at with the men's team. We know where we're at with the women.
That's right.
We're on top. And what can the men's program learn from the women's program? The landscape is different, obviously, but there's got to be something that we can pull from the continued world-class success from the U.S. women's team. We'll talk about both next as we continue on the Massive Report in just a moment. Back with the Massive Report at Hendox. You never know what you're going to see across the street here on High North Campus area. A young lady is being followed by a cat, and she's trying to figure out where the cat belongs, and the cat just wants to go with her. Is she going to take the cat?
I like how she's pointing to the cat to tell it to go
lay down.
Else. Okay, so she
got the cat is staying.
She got
is
the cat staying. To lay down, and then she ran away.
Here comes a puppy too. Oh my goodness! A little husky coming by too, on the other side of the street.
Dude, I think that cat's going to start following her again.
Yeah, it's going back looking for her.
Is the cat going to cross the street? This is the thing.
Don't cross the street, cat.
Yeah, I hope
the traffic
this cat
is too busy.
Not cross the street.
But if you make it, I'll buy you a beer. Okay.
All right, I think the cat's just going to chill out on the
sidewalk. Yeah, that's what cats do. Just messing with her. All right, we're back at the Massive Report.
I would say that was still, I wouldn't watch that for, you know, or in lieu of watching The Crew, but I would say that that is more entertaining content than watching The Crew this past 3 years.
Absolutely.
Before we talk about the national teams, plural, because of course that's in all the news, we were trying to figure out again when the Hell is Real matches, because MLS was dumb and waited like most of the season to schedule these matches. They're both in August, the 10th and the 24th, home and home. This would have been outstanding. Now, I understand the weather was pretty terrible in the spring, but I think one of the games should have been played pretty early on. The weather be damned. When the momentum was there, Cincinnati, excitement about their new team, blah, 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 excitement about The Crew, saving The Crew. That match should have been pretty early on. And now it reminds me, as a Washington State alum, of the 2008 Apple Cup, where Washington was 0-11 and we were 1-10.
Oof.
Oh, I watched the whole game, because beating the Huskies is better than pretty much anything. And we beat them in overtime, 16-13. That doesn't happen very often that we beat them at all. But I bring it up because we're going to have to talk about Hell is Real here in a few weeks. And in my mind, I don't know if you guys are still excited about this, but I'm going to get amped up for it. I think that the whole season comes down to these two matches in a way. They're the only team below us on the table, so we got to win them. So I'm just planting the seed that we need to get fired. You guys look like you're God, we still have to play these games?
It's also, that's also, again, if you're just a psychopath and think that you that this there is actually something to salvage in the season, or you have
Black
to just
magic,
tell yourself
dude.
That.
Well, look, that doesn't make me a psychopath.
6 points,
it makes me
six
an
points
optimist.
Left. No, there's 6 points between Crew and Toronto, and yeah, of course, that assumes everybody, you know, Toronto and everyone else between the Crew losing out for those two games. But if you beat FC Cincy both of those times, you could, in theory, potentially no, but it would still salvage the season.
We have to win these games,
this
right?
This whole season, otherwise, I'm willing to give basically the team the mulligan and give Caleb Porter the mulligan, give the front office the mulligan. You had, you know, previous ownership that took active and selective inaction to put this team behind the eight ball from a business operations side. You had Caleb Porter coming in, not only coming in without being able to choose his own players, but let alone implement staff. And and then you've got unprecedented injuries and, you know, everyone else that's gone, stuff out of your control. So I'll give them a mulligan if we win Hell is Real.
Have to. You know, this reminds me of rivalry day in the Big Ten. You got Ohio State, Michigan, and then you have, like, they're playing for the broken plastic bucket or whatever it is in Indiana. Purdue and Indiana, it's always like 3:30 on Big Ten Network, and there's like a half a house there at IU. That's, but somebody's fired up for it. It's a big rivalry. So I'm just planting the seed.
Whenever I think about those games, the only thing I think about is the possibility that we could lose both and how soul-crushing that
Alex,
would be.
Alex.
Don't put that into the universe, man.
Dude, it's already in the universe. We've lost like 15 games in a row. It's already in the universe. All right. We have to avert it.
Well, we have a month to figure it out.
But
we've got a new goalkeeper. His name is really cool. His name is Room.
Like, yeah, we
His
could
name
totally
is Room.
We could totally lose both those. But we've got a new goalkeeper, and I'm kind of like, yeah, it's true. Yeah.
Yeah. Let's do it. Let's do it. All right.
Let's freaking
so,
go.
Let's celebrate the greatness of the U.S. The U.S. national team.
That's
we
right.
don't have to put like, well, it's the women's. It's the U.S. national team. They represent us as they have with now 4 world championships in the World Cup. I don't even know what else to say about them except this. This pisses me off. And it does a lot of other people as well. Is that these women who have earned the right to strut and to celebrate, and they're called out for things not exactly the same, but things that men do in sports every stinking day. And when you watch SportsCenter, you see all this stuff. That's what you tea drinking That was awesome.
It was awesome.
It was
fun.
It was
so good.
It was fun. Okay? And they get called. What are they supposed to do or not do? And I can understand that women get frustrated with this stuff. Because it's like, well, what do you want us to do? You want us to be strong, and you want us to represent the country, and you want us to bring home the hardware again. But you also want us to always do it exactly the way that you want us to do it.
Yeah.
And, you know, they've thrown off those shackles. And I love that they don't give a crap about it anymore. It's like, oh, I watch my daughter grow up playing soccer and playing at a pretty good level, you know, but not aspiring to that. That's very rarefied air that they're breathing. But I know how hard these women work, and they've worked so hard to get to that point. You know how difficult it is to even get a tryout, to even get called into camp for a national team. It's unbelievably difficult. So excuse them for celebrating their accomplishments, and that's what it is. And it's not like a slight on anyone else. And I'm sorry. If you guys want to knock them off the mountain, then we'll see you in 4 years, right?
And I think if also if you want to, you know, criticize them for or try to police their celebrations or things like that, then, you know, pay them the same amount as the men, and then you can start coming from that. But for a program that isn't it just more successful than the men's program, but and by a long shot, it also brings in more revenue for U.S. soccer than the men's program, and yet they are still not picked. Like, I do not blame these women for having a chip on their shoulder. They should, and it was so awesome. And you go out there and you prove it to everyone else out there that you, I mean, frankly, they deserve to be paid more than the men's team, in my opinion.
Why is the Gold Cup final the same day as the World Cup final? We all knew how this was going to turn out. We all knew that the USA was going to be in the final. And to have the Gold Cup final on the same day, in one way it was kind of cool because, like, well, it's a doubleheader. But, you know, they needed their own stage. So that really bothered me as well. And the men's program has not earned the right to be on the same day as our great U.S. women. And the rest of the world has, even though I feel like the gap has narrowed, in the end, you go, nobody really seemed to be able to figure out how to score against us. And that's, you know, Hope Solo is, you know, she's long gone now. She's retired. And she was great. And that didn't seem to really be a big problem again. So I don't even know what else to say. So they're so unbelievably great, and they represent us perfectly. And I'm tired of the griping about how they should behave. That is such a side issue, and it's offensive.
Yeah, well, and I mean, the annoying thing to me is a lot of the same people who are pushing this narrative of, it's so unbelievable that, you know, the U.S. women would celebrate like this, are the same exact people who retweet the videos of Zlatan Ibrahimovic when he's comparing himself to God.
Yeah.
Or retweet, you know, Paul Pogba dancing in front of the opposing fans and their fans loving it. Taunting opposing fans and opposing teams, there is a long history of that. And maybe nobody realized this, but England's one of our rivals. And when they scored, they did the little binocular celebration at our fans. And so if we're going to sip tea back at their fans, deal with it.
Yeah.
If you don't like us and you want us to shut up, beat us. And so, you know, I have very little patience for that. But what a team this was. I have been watching the U.S. women as long as I can remember. And you know, I remember seeing, you know, players like Meaham growing up and being like, man, what a great team. This might be my favorite team of them all. This team is so, I don't even know what the word for it is. But, I mean, they are cocky and they back it up in a way that I just love. This is the team that says, you know, yeah, Europe, this might be your sport, but we are going to go overseas and we are going to dominate you. And you're not going to get shots on goal. You're not going to get half chances. We are going to beat you from the first minute to the 90-whatever minute. And, you know, you're going to wish you never played us. They're just great.
There's, you know, the goal scoring is what we talk about, but it's those moments, and you saw him even in the Netherlands game where there's a little bit of a breakdown, and you see them backing each other up and just doing the dirty work, clearing the lines when need be, and they snuff out problems so quickly that when someone scores on them, it's literally shocking. It's like, wow, okay. It's they're so disciplined and so in tune with one another. It's really so much fun to watch. As if you love the game, it's so much fun to watch because it's like you can't pick out anything. You go, well, they need to work on that, and maybe someday we'll be there where we have to. You know, the rest of the world is going to catch up, but for whatever our faults in our men's program, our women's program is spot on. What can the men's program, and are we even capable of it because we can't seem to get out of our own way? What can we learn from what they do and what they don't do?
Well, I think one thing, and I'm not sure if I have anything to actually back this up, but I feel like the U.S. men lose a lot of their top talent, athletic talent, around middle school, high school to other sports, where, you know, if you're really good at maybe football and soccer, maybe you go with football because you think that it's more lucrative.
Specialization is a problem. Yeah. You know, I'm older than you guys. I remember, and it wasn't me. I just played soccer and that was it. But, you know, a lot of kids would play football, basketball, soccer, or track, and, you know, whatever mixture you want. And we... There's a lot of pressure to specialize now, and I think it's worked out better for the women's program than it has for the men. But I think more, and we've talked about this. It's like I don't think that U.S. soccer gets an F for growing the game in areas that are economically challenged.
Yeah.
And they've been called out on it for years. And this is the world's game. They play it everywhere. They play it in the most impoverished areas imaginable. It's because it's so simple. Yeah. You need a ball. That's what you need, a bunch of people.
Well, and we're one of the only countries where it's a pay-to-play system.
Yeah.
And it's ridiculous. And if we want to compete with other countries, at a certain point, that's going to have to change. We sneak by with the women because the other countries, it's just so underdeveloped. And there's not the money. I mean, you look at some of these other countries. I mean, Italy's finally starting to get a women's league off the ground. Those women don't make much at all. Even though they're with the Italian national team, they're earning very, very little. They're playing in front of 200 people tops. It's still got a ways to go. Although the women's final this year in Italy almost sold out Juventus Stadium. It was a really packed house. I'm not sure how many of those tickets were sold and how many were just distributed, but it was a very good crowd. That level of interest needs to travel everywhere for things to change. And I think Europe's on that track, but they've got a long way to go. The U.S. just need to put their money where their mouth is. If we really want our national team to be as good as we say we want it to be, then we need to fund it from the ground up. Yep. We need to do the kind of investment that you've seen from France, for example, with their women's program. They, I think two cycles ago, started just putting money into things. They had the women start to train at Clairefontaine, their national training center. They really funded a lot of academies and things like that to help bring up these young, talented players. We're sitting on over $100 million. What are we doing with that money other than giving it to Carlos Cordero and, you know, FIFA delegates to get World Cups and get more money that we can then sit on for a longer period of time and we can use to bribe and win more World Cups and still pay more people, whoever's after Carlos Cordero.
And this is the perfect time, too, because so many parents are questioning putting their kids in football because of head injuries. And this starts when they're 6 years old. They're making decisions about if they even have the wherewithal to put their kid in sports, and not everybody has that. And believe me, I suppose I could sit down with my wife and add it all up, how much that, you know, many years and money well spent. It was a great experience for all of us in my house, and we wouldn't change a thing. But just looking at it from how many people can – we were blessed to be able to afford to put our kid through a club system for many years. And a lot of people can't do that. And yet, there's talent out there. And it's not only about the, well, we got to find that diamond in the rough, but it's also about doing good and putting kids into a positive activity. And 99.99% of them are just going to play for fun, and that's great. That also grows the game.
Yeah.
It, when they grow up, they're going to be coming out and going to MLS games and so forth. But it's also just the right thing to do. And U.S. soccer has done a terrible job of growing the game beyond the suburbs, beyond where the money is. Mm-hmm. And they've been very myopic about that. And that has to change. Okay, I'm going to step off my soapbox now. U.S. lose to Mexico in the Gold Cup final 1-0.
Yeah.
And I feel like I come away from the Gold Cup encouraged by what Greg Berhalter has accomplished so far. But we can see what the immediate goal is. We have to beat Mexico before we can do anything else. What did you guys take out of the Gold Cup?
Well, I thought it was positive for the young talent that we brought along. I think in all of the discussions that I've seen during the tournament and after the tournament, people are forgetting, or and I don't quite know how, that we missed the World Cup last cycle. I cannot stress enough that we did not qualify for the World Cup last cycle. I think everything that we do in the Gold Cup, in our friendlies, in our qualifiers, needs to be with the understanding that we failed last time, and something needs to change, because the status quo that we have gone on for at least the last 10 to 15 years is failing us. And despite the fact that, you know, MLS has grown significantly, we have an academy system now that's you know, fairly well developed, although not where it needs to be, we have not seen any fruits from that labor, really. We have a generational talent now in Christian Pulisic, and a couple other, you know, very talented players who are young. I think Tim Weah is going to be a force to be reckoned with in a couple years, but they're still not there. So the Gold Cup was a good learning experience for that young core group, but I think it's time to cut the old guys out. I think it's time to take basically any player who was on that failed roster in the Trinidad game, and they shouldn't see the pitch again in a U.S. shirt. And I hate to say that, but they're not part of the plan for Qatar. They shouldn't be part of the plan for these friendlies. They shouldn't be part of the plan for the qualifiers. It's time to move on.
Well, they were in the Gold Cup, and Michael Bradley especially, maybe not so much in the final, but, you know, he showed pretty well.
Yeah.
That was, you think, the last gasp for him and Jose Altidore out the door, perhaps. They can't be a part of, when we get into qualification starting next year, I mean, things start to speed up a lot. Are they in? Are they out? Who else is out? Who else is in?
I think that we have a tendency as U.S. fans to not want to replace any player until there's a clear heir apparent of equal quality waiting in the wings. And I think that we aren't blessed with all of these talented players like a lot of other countries are, where you can do that. I think you have to develop these talented players. You have to give them that kind of international exposure. You have to kind of mold them into the players that you know, you saw before. I think in previous cycles, you saw this with Jermaine Jones, for example, where we didn't really have a kind of box-to-box defensive-minded midfielder who could get really physical with players, and so we just kept calling up Jermaine Jones basically forever, even though he was way past it and could barely find a job in MLS at that point. Yeah. He was still getting capped. Yeah. We did it with Clint Dempsey way past his prime. We did it with Landon Donovan, even when maybe that was not quite so smart. I think we're doing that with Bradley now. I think he's kind of next in line. There's nobody who's, you know, quite fits that same profile. I think you just start throwing kids in there and figure out what works. Because the World Cup is not that far away.
Will Trapp one of those kids, or I think he is. The time passed him by?
No, I think he's the best we've got who could potentially participate in this World Cup.
He was invisible.
Yeah,
he was horrible.
The Gold Cup.
He was horrible. But I think the only way he's going to get better with this team and with this system and with this squad is if you play him. I don't think that we want a 33-year-old Michael Bradley, you know, jogging around in 100-plus degree heat in Qatar. You know, he has
he's
no
gonna be older than that.
He has no motor anymore. So I don't know what you do other than throw a guy like Trapp in there. And the thing about this next World Cup too, this is going to be a weird tournament. It's going to be a weird tournament not just for the U.S. but for every team that qualifies, if we're lucky enough to qualify, by the way. But I think that all eyes really need to be on 2026 with the World Cup here in the United States. That's going to be
we
a huge moment.
We don't even know who those players are going to be
we
for
don't.
The most part.
We don't.
Except for Christian Pulisic.
Yeah, I mean, knock on wood, as long as these guys don't pick up any, you know, career-threatening injuries, anything like that.
How much does that kid jump off the screen? I mean, you love to watch those rare guys who are unafraid of taking on however many people you throw at them and break them down.
Yeah, and I mean, we've got him, we've got Tim Weah, who is really, really incredible. We've got Josh Sargent, who is on the young side right now, but by the time the World Cup comes around, I think he's going to be 21, something like that, 22. I would not hesitate to throw him in there as a third string striker, you know, third choice off the bench kind of guy, just to get him the experience. But I think Greg is almost a perfect coach for mentoring a bunch of young, talented players, and I think that we need to think about that. And we need to build these rosters with that in mind. I don't care about the Gold Cup. I have never cared about the Gold Cup. The Gold Cup is a Mickey Mouse trophy that is completely worthless.
True.
We've won it a bunch of times, and people care for 2 days, and then everybody moves on.
I only cared. Yeah. I cared more about this. Back in the day, I used to like to watch it because, you know, guys like Brian McBride were in it, Frankie Hayduck, so forth. But this one I cared about because I felt like this program seriously had some accounting to do.
Yeah.
And we all knew it was going to be USA Mexico, and it was a decent showing, but I felt like Mexico pretty much did what they wanted to do. They wanted to press high. They wanted to put the pressure on us, and we were reacting to it the whole time.
Yeah.
Jozy Altidor did not look good.
He almost never does.
No, he doesn't.
But Gyasi Zardes couldn't. I mean, this is also Greg Berhalter, who has intimate familiarity with Will Trapp, with Gyasi Zardes, with what he can get out of those players. And in the final against against Mexico, against the team that you really measure yourself, both of those guys were on the bench in favor of Michael Bradley and Jozy Altidor.
Yeah,
and he knows that he's going to be managing this team in, you know, 2022 for the World Cup. And I think he knows what he has in Will Trapp and Jozy Altidor and Gyasi Zardes in terms of, you know, on this stage for this national team. And you saw the decision he made.
Well, the part of the Jamaica game that I saw before the rain delay, Jossie looked good. And I felt like he was relishing that role as sort of the man on the post, you know, to use a basketball reference, and just quickly distributing the ball with his back to the goal. And I like to see that out of him.
But what happened when he had a chance to put a shot on target?
Yeah, you're right. I mean, I don't think that Zardes is going to be a part of the World Cup qualifying. Will Trapp, it's up in the air. Zach Steffen, we know. We know we have our goalkeeper, and that feels pretty good. So we'll leave it at that. Kudos, obviously, to the U.S. women who win another World Cup. And the men, we'll see. Mm-hmm. You know, we'll see. Road ahead.
That final was just so nice for the women. I loved that game. I could talk about it for 2 hours.
Well, Rose Lavelle, you know, from Cincinnati, scoring with her left foot. I looked at that goal over and over again, and I was wondering what the Dutch defenders were doing, giving her all that space, and seemingly not to know that, you know, she wanted to play the ball with her left foot. And it was such a great shot and such you know, just,
I just love the slow mo over, like when you see her hit that in slow mo, and she actually falls away, doesn't see the ball go in net, but knows it's going.
Yeah.
She's turning away, contorting. Yeah. She's just got this awesome smile on her face.
Yeah,
and I mean, this the thing with this team is that, like, they are the best in the world. I mean, hands down, they knew that coming, you know, into this tournament. I mean, we always like, oh no, France, you know, they couldn't. But you really knew it was U.S.'s, you know, cup to lose. And they still play with this chip on their shoulder. It's not like cockiness. It's not, you know.
I think it's cockiness. Yeah.
But there's a difference between like cockiness and having a chip on
you
your shoulder
back it up.
And wanting to. And that's what it is.
You gotta back
it's like
it up.
Johnny Manziel, like that. That's, you know, that's a cocky guy, but he doesn't have a chip on his shoulder. I mean, he's never hurt and won for anything. And they find something to be motivated and someone, you know, to be mad at. Whether it's, and then they find a way to just, you know, place that all against the team that they're playing, and I mean, just absolutely dominant. And they've got personalities. Like, I mean, look, yeah, you. I mean, you get it to an extent with Kristen Pulisic, but like, look at, you know, think of a memorable thing that anyone else on the U.S. national team. Yeah, I mean, just any sort of personality flair. Nothing for the men.
Well, I think they'll get there. We don't know who is going to be on this roster when we get down to the seriousness of qualifying for the World Cup. So we can only speculate and only draw broad strokes as to what we think it's going to be. Encouraging, but a lot of work left to be done. U.S. women, obviously, thumbs up. All right, not to bring everybody down, but we got to talk about Orlando City, and we'll do that as succinctly as we can next on the Massive Report. We are back at Hendox for our final segment this week on the Massive Report. Bart, you're here. You have an awesome vintage 76 Tribe jersey on.
Carlos Slam Tana.
Yeah. Boobie. I love it. Hopefully he'll win the home run derby tonight. I would be in favor of that.
As long as he just hits home runs through the rest of the season.
Right. Talk about your bag, man.
That's right. You're right, Brian. It is Segment 3, and Segment 3 is brought to you, as always, by the Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls Supporters Group / Lifestyle Brand. Follow GCG Bag on Twitter and Facebook at GCG Bag 96 for all the latest, you know, thoughtful, salient commentary and fan analysis that we're able to burp out. The Greater Columbus Golden Boys and Girls, champions of Mega Tailgate, definitely not failing, and official sponsors of the Massive Report. It's a thing.
And look for their awesome banner. Montreal game on July 20th.
We need to get a new one now because it got whose free kick missed it, and it actually put it punctured the banner.
Oh,
so,
no!
You know, crew fans, if anybody wants to, you know, support us and build
GoFundMe.
A new one, or yeah, we need to put a new one up there to fix it.
All right. Well, we're not home this week, so you do have time to fix your banner. We are at Orlando, and there's something just irritating about Orlando City fan. I can't quite put my finger on. It's like, well, we have a stadium and we had Kaká. Why doesn't anything ever happen that's good?
And the referees are against them.
And the referees are against them and so forth. They're a whiny bunch, but at this point we're looking up at them and it would be fun to knock them off. What do they have?
Crybaby fans.
Okay.
Yeah, actually, like, you know, they're just whining about the referees, but Pro is actually conspiring against Columbus Crew. We need to be clear about that. Everything that they're complaining about is not merited. It's
so
BS. It's completely
projecting.
But
they're projecting
on.
Yeah,
but
okay.
For Columbus, we actually do have the Pro Referee Association is absolutely in cahoots with Don Garber and MLS, the MLS league offices to screw the crew over week in and week out.
Black magic. We've already discussed
the official stance of Massive Report.
Yeah. All right,
it's black magic. We're pretty sure.
Who am I to argue?
So they think that they're the victims of black magic, but in reality, they're still one of Don Garber's special baby children. Who you know, get preferential treatment in all kinds of different ways. They have Nani, who's good, kind of. Who else do they have? They have anybody? They got Dom Dwyer, right? He sucks.
I don't remember.
I was, you know, with Orlando, the thing for me that I observed over the years was that their back four were always really slow and not athletic. Is that still a thing? I mean, is that still what we're going to be looking at on Saturday?
I'll be honest. I have not watched much of Orlando City this season because the very thought of Major League Soccer this year is borderline depressing. So they've got Nani.
Yeah, all right.
I think they still have Dom Dwyer. Yeah. But he's in, like, dad mode right now. I only see photos and stuff on Instagram.
Okay.
I'm a dad. You mean
Mr.
Cool.
Sidney LaRue?
That's right, yeah. Yeah, he's got a new baby girl. And his son, Cassius, will not come within, I think, 5 feet of the baby. Like, they hate each other. So
wow.
That's been fun to follow.
Okay.
I've got a bad feeling about this game. I feel like we're going to watch it. It's going to look really good. And then in the 85th minute, Nani's going to dive and get a penalty and bury it.
All right.
Yeah, Sasha Kleischen is the other guy that was on the tip of our tongues. Who's that, like, MLS sort of has-been that they've got? But, I don't want to, you know, spoil things. We'll hold the picks till the end. And I won't surprise you, but I don't feel good about it either. I mean, it's just... Everything seems. This team just seems to be snake bit, but you know we've got a chance of potentially seeing. They're coming off a pair of losses to Philadelphia, and then they played Crew. So we were talking about compression in the season earlier, and how it's like we've got to play, you know, FC Cincy in those couple games. They went Crew, Philly, Crew. Like, it's just this entire schedule is just.
It is weird. There has to be some sort of madness behind why they do that. I don't know what it is, but okay. Well, let's go ahead and make our picks. I'm not making a pick. All right, I'll make a pick. 0-0. Eloy Room comes in and stands on his head and is a hero. But again, we struggle to score. I'll say 0-0.
I'm gonna say we lose 2-1. I'm gonna say Zardes gets a goal. We all think it's going really well, and then we concede in like the 60th minute, and then that gloom and doom sets in a little bit, and you're like, oh god, they're gonna concede again.
Mm-hmm.
And Nani comes on as a sub in like the 89th minute, immediately dives, immediately gets a penalty, and buries it. And then Orlando City fans just, you know, justify it by saying, oh well. They just owed us that for that other game when it was a 50-50 call and it went the other way.
I feel like Orlando is one of those cities where even though they've had the magic, they don't know how to be sports fans.
No. It's I mean, they're falling asleep or you're going to Disney.
Does anyone actually live there? Or
Orlando is objectively a horrible city with horrible people except for Disney World. Disney World is great.
Disney World is terrible, too. Yeah. I don't like it.
But the reason Disney World is great is because nobody in there is actually from Orlando. It's all just, like, people on vacation and everybody's happy. And then you get, like, a bunch of college kids working there who are, like,
you just got to pay for everything. All the food is completely overpriced. You've got to, like, pay to not wait in lines longer.
To tolerate Disney World, you have to go to that. What is the one part where they have the British pub?
Oh, you talk about Epcot.
World Showcase.
Yeah.
You go to that pub, it's like $11 to pound a beer that will allow you to survive the rest of Disney World.
Yeah.
It's like a... I have nothing good to say about Orlando.
No. So
I've got a World Showcase soccer story if you guys want to hear it.
All right,
so,
let's go.
Not the last
at
time
Sports
I was
World?
No, it was
ESPN
at,
Sports
it was
World?
In Italy in World Showcase.
Ooh.
This was not my last trip to Disney, but the trip before that, I was there with a friend, and we're walking around Italy, and we're about to go in the pizza place to get some pizza.
Uh-huh.
And outside the pizza place, my friend like elbows me and is like, is that Alex Morgan? And I look over, and it was.
It all comes
and
full
circle. And I'm like, not only is that Alex Morgan, but it's also Alex Morgan, her husband, whose name I can't remember, but I think he actually still plays for Orlando City, and Ashlyn Harris, U.S. Women's National Team goalkeeper, and like a couple other random people. It was Ashlyn Harris's birthday. They were all completely trashed. There were a bunch of kids around
they
there.
They could afford those $11 beers at Epcot.
Yeah. It was Ashlyn Harris's birthday, apparently. They were all super drunk. But I didn't want to bug them because there were kids all around, and I didn't want the kids to, like, realize it's like a bunch of national teamers. So I just kind of, like, waved and just like kept walking. And I tweeted Ashlyn Harris like 5 minutes later and said, just saw you in Epcot, but didn't want to bug you and have the kids realize who you were. Happy birthday. And she liked it. That's my that's my Epcot
story. Well, that's better than mine, which is like I was miserable the whole time. Only I could be miserable in Disney World. My name is Brian Phillips. I work at CD125. Listen to my radio station, if you would be so inclined. Bart Logan, Alex Stanek, Sam Fahmy. We got to wrap this up.
By the way, the crew are going to win.
You got to do your picks.
Want to get that in there.
All right.
I'm basically going with most of kind of the stuff that Alex was saying. So,
Bart,
getting ready to soul-crushingly lose, it looks like, as they fall behind late. And then comes the sub for Luis Diaz.
My God.
Two goals.
My God.
one at like the 88th minute and then just one at the death. And crew win 3-2.
I like it.
Thank you, Bart.
I
apologize for not letting you get that great pick in. We need it. We need something.
Exactly.
God help us.
I'm going to speak something into existence.
God help us. I'm going back to the bar here at Hendox to try to make it all better. We thank you for listening to the Massive Report, and we thank our sponsor, 180 Property Development. 180 Property Development is your partner, redeveloping, remodeling, or even building your home from the ground up. Skilled builders and designers are ready to help you build the home of your dreams. Check out 180propertydevelopment.com for your next projects. For Bart, for Alex, for Sam, I'm Brian. We thank you for listening, and we will talk to you next week from Hendox.